Thanks again for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast on CelticUnderground.net. This is the 2020 year review. It didn't turn out quite as expected. It was supposed to be a 1 hour review of 2020 with myself, Hallboy, St. Anthony and Anthony Murray. For various reasons, it ended up being a 2 hour review by myself and St. Anthony. So, hope you enjoy it. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, St. Anthony. That's what the public wants, but I want nothing. Society stops from going underground. I'm joined by St. Anthony. How you doing, Saint?
Very well, Harry. I'm glad I turned up with a Woody Benny show.
Exactly, yeah. It'd be a solo review of 2020, which is what we're doing today. I just thought, you know, it's quite an unusual year. We did a quadruple treble. We finished it off. In the meantime, we had all the stuff in the middle, so... we'll get going with our review of the year. So we went into the year after the Dubai winter shutdown, with the situation neck and neck with Rangers. How were you feeling going into the turn of the year?
I was quite annoyed, actually, because the League Cup final in December, we beat Rangers and we got away with it. If it wasn't for Fraser Foster having that great game, then I think we would have got turned over. So my hope was that when we played Rangers in the last game of the year, that somehow Lennon would learn from his mistakes. And I was actually in Lanzarote at the time watching it on television, and I was horrified because I just had a horrible gut feeling for the start of the game. He tried to play the same tactics. It just seemed to be a repeat of, maybe not on the same scale, but I thought Rangers were probably edged the game. And that rang alarm bells with me that tactically Gerrard had the measure of Lennon, and it dawned on me for the first time that we might have been in a difficult place. So as we moved into the new year, it was obvious that I think Lennon had to change something. And I was really pleased that he went with two up front and more of a 4-4-2. I think sometimes it altered to a 3-5-2, but in the main it seemed to be like a 4-4-2 formation. And then we just hit form. It didn't happen immediately, but personally speaking, I was very relieved to see two up front because Griffiths and Edward are wonderful players. They're chalk and cheese. I mean, Eddie's so technical and classy, whereas Griffiths... it's your typical goal scorer, penalty box striker. And I think both of them are wonderful players. And to get the two of them in the same team, I think was paramount at the beginning of the year to putting us back on track.
Yeah, first game after the break was away to Thistle in the Scottish Cup. The team for that was Foster, Frimpong, Julian, Beaton, who get substituted for Simonovic after just 8 minutes. Taylor, Brown, Incham, McGregor, Rogic, Edward, and Griffiths up front. And that was an odd game. We had the injury to Beaton early on. The game sort of was petering out, and then Thistle got a penalty where the referee was still at the halfway line. Alan Muir was still at the halfway line when he gave the penalty to Thistle, which clearly wasn't a penalty. But I tell you, just as I'm looking at the team, because that team that, with the exception of Foster, that team that started against Thistle could start tomorrow, injuries prevailing. It's the substitutes bench that's so very different. The substitutes bench was Gordon, Simonovic, Klamala, Bauer, Arzani, Hayes and Bolingoli. That's the whole bench, with the exception of Klamala, who just signed. That whole bench, gone from the club, which is something we'll maybe talk about, but a big...
One of the things I remember for that night, and you might have been there yourself.
Yeah.
is it the Jackie Husband stand? It's a big stand. And I was pleased I get tickets for my son and a couple of his pals. They're teenagers, they were delighted to go. And the overcrowding in that stand was quite serious. We had to get taken up to the very, very back and taken through the executive areas to come out the other side of the stand, because there was so many people in that. I don't know if they sold too many tickets. I don't know if it was just too many people squeezing into one area, but it was really congested that night. Probably the most congested that I've seen a stand. You know, in the old days of the terrace, when it was packed, everybody swayed a bit. But, you know, when you're in a stand, it's hard to move, you know, sideways if people are blocking you. You can't move in front for the seats. You can't move back for the seats. You know, it was very, very bad overcrowding. And I think that was swept under the carpet a wee bit. So it was.
I think, and this is not a dig at the Green Brigade, but I think a lot of the time what happens at away games where it's possible is the Green Brigade go to a section. If they've not got tickets together, they create their space together. And then you have the people who are maybe not officially part of the Green Brigade, but would like to be part of that atmosphere, move from where their seats are to where it is. And so I think it's a combination of that causes a problem a lot of the time for people. So I was at the back of whichever one is the one behind the goals, and it was all right. So we beat Thistle 2-1, and then we have an away game at Rugby Park against Kilmarnock, and that's the first league game back after things. And again, the team for that is Foster, Simonovic, Julian Iron, and this is where we sort of started to look at going to the 3-5-2 with Simonovic, Julian and Iron playing the three at the back, and then Frimpong and Cham, Brown, McGregor, Hayes and Edward. So Hayes is playing as a left wing back and Frimpong is a right wing back, and we've got Gordon again the bench. Gordon, Taylor, Bio, Klamala, Bauer, Arzani and Mikey Johnson on the bench. And it was 3-1.
You mentioned the name there, I think it's worth bringing up. Johnny Hayes wasn't the best Celtic player, and I think there was a wee bit of, I think people were a wee bit downhearted when he joined, underwhelmed, because of the fact that he was maybe replacing Patrick Roberts, who was a big favourite with the fans. But that formation we began to play at that time was a 3-5-2 with Frimpong on wide in the right and Johnny Hayes wide in the left. Now, Johnny Hayes wasn't a left back. I think he had these flaws that were exposed when he played at left back. But when he played in that left wing back role, where a centre back who could cover him on the left hand side, I thought he gave us a big boost last season in terms of getting performances and results. And I think his contribution was underestimated, and I was actually disappointed that we let him go. I think to give Johnny Hayes another year's contract would have bailed us out a couple of holes this season in the left flank. So it would have.
Well, the other thing, and I'm going to be a bit controversial, I don't think Bolingoli was as bad as some people thought he was or said he was. And actually, Bolingoli was, for me, this is the thing, Bolingoli was more of a wing back than a left back. He was he got to the byline and could put better crosses in than Taylor and Laxalt can put in. And the strange thing is, that's when we then stopped playing Bolingoli, when we went to 3-5-2.
Well, I think Johnny Hayes stole his thunder at that point, though, because he came in and played very, very well. And he also showed, I think he went up in everybody's estimation when he showed tremendous courage in the cup final, playing through an injury at a time in the game when we were down to 10 men and I think we'd used all our subs. So, I think he'd been up in the estimation of the fans at that point, and he began to become maybe not a fan's favourite, but he certainly went up in the esteem of the supporters who rated his contribution over that period.
So we'd gone into that Kilmarnock game. I think we were 2 points ahead of Rangers, but they had a game in hand after the New Year game. So you know, they were feeling pretty confident. So we then had a home league game against Ross County, and again the team Foster, Bauer, Simonovic, Julian, Hayes. So it was back to a four with Hayes as a left back. Brown, McGregor, Forrest, Incham, Johnson, Griffiths, and it was a comfortable 3-0 against Ross County, being a bit sticky, and then Griffiths went off and Edward came on, and Edward scored two goals in 2-3 minutes. So we started to then move a wee bit clearer of Rangers. And for me, the game that really demonstrated us kicking on in the season and things starting to change was the following game, which was the last game in January when we went up to Perth and mm-hmm. played St Johnson. And it was only 3-0, but it was 3-0. And at half-time, you thought, even at half-time, you were thinking that we could easily be 6 or 7 goals up at half-time. Mm-hmm. It was one of the most scintillating performances of last season, that game. And it was just so dynamic, and atmosphere was good. It was a midweek game. The team was
heavy rain. Am I thinking? Was it heavy rain that night?
It was really torrential rain. There was Foster, Simonovic, Julian, Ayer. Again, we played the sort of 3-5-2 with Taylor, Forrest and Cham, Brown, McGregor, Greg Taylor, left wing back, Griffiths and Edward. That was the one where Mikey Johnson, Johnson came on, and we'd used all our substitutes, and he got a niggle, and he went down, and the players were asking if he was okay. Mm-hmm. He said he was all right. Klamala came on for Edward, and then literally a minute later, 30 seconds later, he then went back down again and had to go off, and that was the injury that then took him out for ages.
Yeah, yeah.
Where Lennon told him to F off as he walked up the tunnel. Now, Lennon got criticised, Lennon got criticised for that one, but I remember at the time thinking, I'd be raging at him if I was Lennon as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were just about to make our last substitution. He had an injury and stayed on the park, and a minute later then couldn't play. And we played the last 7 minutes plus injury time with 10 men.
Mm-hmm. It's a good job it was 3-0 and it was 1-0, or it might have been worse for us.
Exactly. So, yeah, that was the one where it was absolutely pouring down. And so after that game, us and Rangers had played the same amount of games. We were in 61 points and they were in 57. So since they'd had a game in hand, which would have put them a point in front of us, effectively it'd been a 5-point turnaround in just a handful of games mm-hmm. for that. So that was the end of January. And then we went into February and had 101 games in February. We played 8 games in February.
Mm-hmm.
It's away to Hamilton, away to Motherwell, away to Clyde in the Cup, home to Hearts, away to Aberdeen, away to Copenhagen, home to Kilmarnock and home to Copenhagen. So what was your thoughts on the February part of the season?
The first game there you're talking about is the Hamilton Accies game, where, if I recall rightly, we were getting beat. We were certainly drawn for a long period of the game. And I remember, I'm going to mention Johnny Hayes funny enough, because that was the one that, if you remember, Johnny Hayes vaulted the boards to get the ball. He showed a great sense of urgency that we needed at that time. And from his quick throw-in, I think it was Julian who scored the goal that maybe put his 2-1 up.
That's right, because Hamilton had taken the lead.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So We were pressing, we were having a lot of pressure, but we didn't look like scoring. But again, it's just a wee thing that Johnny Hayes did. You know, he literally jumped the advertising boards, grabbed the ball, vaulted it back, took a quick throw in to get us in the front foot. And it's just another indication, I think, how I think Hayes was towards the end, he was undervalued. Another thing as well is around this period, Champ began to come onto a game. I've never been a big fan of Champ, to be honest.
You don't say.
Well, you know it for WhatsApp mutterings, but Cham over the January February period began to look like a classy player. He is a classy player. I think that's a frustrating thing. We all know that he's got talent and ability, but he somehow lacks that drive that you would like your players to have.
Yeah, because I'm just looking at that Julian goal was in the 78th minute. Then Edward scored 3 minutes later, then Forrest scored in the first minute of injury time to make it a 4-1. So we've never seemed to, I mean, I know it's our thing with plastic pitches, but, you know, our most recent win over Hamilton was probably one of our best that we've had in, because, you know, even under Brendan Rodgers, you would start off games, you know, with a good start and think, right, okay, that's us. And then we would just lapse into very average stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to get a good win. The other thing there is Welsh made his debut. We brought him back from Hamilton on loan.
Mm-hmm.
So Welsh made his debut that night as well. So that was that. And then the other games, we went to Motherwell on a midweek game and had a really nice 4-0 victory.
You need to mention Callum McGregor that night. Callum McGregor was awesome.
That was
one of the best games he's played for Celtic. He was absolutely sublime that night. It was just a classic Callum McGregor performance, controlled, didn't put a pass wrong, attacked down the left flank, scored a great goal. Everything you'd look for in a midfield player.
Yeah, it was. I just remember watching that night, and just Callum McGregor was always standing in space,
mm-hmm.
and always offering himself for the ball when you saw it, because I was watching it at home. And again, the team, that was back to another 3-5-2, that one. Mm-hmm. Foster, Simonovic, Julian, Ayer. Simonovic, Julian, Ayer were the three at the back. Forrest is the right wing back. Brown, McGregor and Cham. Taylor's the left wing back. Griffiths and Edward. And again, the bench was Bain, Welsh, Elianussi, who was just come back from injury, Bolingoli, Rogic, Christie and Klamala. And it wasn't until the second half that, I mean, we were only 1-0 at half time.
Mm-hmm.
Made it 2-1 at 51, McGregor at 75, and then Edward in 80. So we're really starting to, they were starting to drop points on a regular basis, and we were starting to motor. And then we were back in the Scottish Cup. And of course, we revisited Clyde, where everybody was making reference to the Roy Keane debut game where we'd lost to Clyde, but there was no particular issues in this game. It was a comfortable 3-0 victory.
The one thing I remember about that day is Shved was on the bench, and I don't think he'd been in the bench yet. I certainly don't remember him particularly being near the first team, and I was bursting to see him get a good run. And, you know, we were 3-0 up against, well, I think we were 2-0 up for the majority of the game. I think one of the goals came very late on. But he only gave Shved the last 5 minutes, which I thought was crazy considering the level of opposition you were against, and also maybe rest some of your better players and don't risk injuries. But I was annoyed that day. I thought he could have given Shved 20 or 25 minutes rather than bringing him on with 5 minutes to go and basically just seeing time out.
The other player who made the bench that day, who didn't get on, and sat on the bench for until it was too late this season was Sorrell. January signing Sorrell made it onto the bench that day. Didn't get on. Didn't really get on for. Anyway, so that was. I was in the Scottish Cup against Clyde. So we then had a fantastic evening game against Hearts. And Hearts have been doing well against. I get some results against Rangers, and they got their new manager. And I remember being fortunate enough to go to the press conference afterwards, and he just rambled away, and his whole demeanour, I just thought, this is a guy who's got no ability to turn that team around. And at the same time as we beat Hearts, Rangers were losing to Kilmarnock away. Stephen Gerrard at the time said, I thought we had the mentality and the character to sustain a push, but on the evidence of the last 4 to 5 weeks, I'm getting proven wrong. So, yeah, we had that was a great night, a great performance against Hearts.
The shape of the team at that point, my recollection is that you had three centre-backs, was Ayer, Simonovic and Julian. Three very tall, mobile, fairly aggressive guys. And then when you move into midfield, you had Brown and McGregor controlling the game in the centre. You had Forrest on the right-hand side. You either had Hayes or Taylor on the left. And then Chambers filling that sort of number 10 role and just behind the strikers. And then you had the two up front, Griffiths and Edward, clicked at this point. They were scoring goals for fun. It was terrific. So the whole shape of the team from late December and January had been changed. The personnel hadn't changed a great deal, but it was the shape of the team. And I think everybody who remembers that period was so happy because it just suited the players. You know, the players that I've mentioned there were now playing, if I could describe it, as the square pegs were now in square holes. You know, the Lennon was no longer asking people to play out of position. And I think that showed everybody just clicked. And there was a feeling at that point that we weren't going to lose a game. We were on a roll.
Absolutely. And it's the thing that's then... I understand why they let Simonovic go. He was very injury prone. Obviously, we'll get onto it in a minute. Was also mistake prone in big European games, it seemed to be. But we replaced him with Duffy. Who would you rather have in our squad just now, Simonovic or Duffy?
The one thing I feel obliged to say here is that Duffy came with a pedigree. He was an Ireland international. He played in the English Premiership. Not just played, he played a number of games in it. And he seemed to be very well regarded down in Brighton. So I can't think of many signings that we've had in the last 10 years that have been more disappointed than Shane Duffy. Because he should have had everything we needed. He was passionate about the club. He knew what Celtic was about. We were told that he was aggressive. And he was exactly the type of player that we were looking for. I have never seen that aggression in him. I think the guy looks like a nervous wreck. But when he's got a ball at his feet, he's just an absolute disaster zone. You're never quite sure what he's going to do. He's blunder-ridden. And it's such a disappointment because I think he was so keen to do well. But going back to Simonovic, he was injury prone, and as you say there, that he had a blunder or two in him. But generally speaking, in the SPL, Simonovic didn't let you down. You know, overall, he was a decent signing.
So we then go up to Aberdeen. And have a lunchtime kickoff, and we're pulling ahead at Rangers. You're still wary, and we take the lead with McGregor. You think everything's great. Aberdeen equalise, and then in the 81st minute, Big Ayer goes and scores to make it 2-1. And really just keep that winning run going. Again, it was the three at the back. It was Beaton, Julian, and Ayer. Simonovic was injured, getting back to just commenting on about being injury prone. But again, it's Forrest playing as a right wing back and Greg Taylor as a left wing back, and it's pretty much what you've just described in terms of the team thereafter, being on the bench in Bayo, Hayes, Christie, Rogic, Elianusi and Frimpong are the substitutes. Any particular specific memories on that one?
Oh yeah, I mean, we can't not mention Ayer's goal. It was a fantastic goal, and it was such a well-deserved goal as well, because Ayer has his critics at times, but he's a very, very committed player to Celtic, and he's still quite a young player in many respects. He's still maybe learning his trade. And the other thing about Ayer I like about him is that I think I might be wrong here, but did we not change the shape of the team near the end and put Ayer at right back, which resulted in him running up the park in the right back zone to get the goal? And it was a well worked goal, and he took it so well, you know, it was cool as anything. But I always remember Derek McInnes sort of jokingly made a comment after the game. He was ruining the fact that you know, that Aberdeen had lost a late goal. Actually, Aberdeen played well that day, probably were deserving of a draw. But he commented that Ayer had ran by the dugout like a thoroughbred racehorse. Yep. Running in the track. And when you see that from behind the goal, the ground the big man made up was absolutely immense. He just saw his opportunity. And 9 times out of 10, that ball doesn't come to him. But this occasion, I can't remember who it was, Forrester, McGregor, worked the ball out to him and just gave him that maybe split second to control it, and then just place it past the goalkeeper. Tremendous goal. Absolutely tremendous goal.
So we're romping ahead in the league, and we've got Europa League, because we'd won the Europa League group stage. First mm-hmm. Scottish team to win a group stage of a European competition. We won the Europa League group stage, and we're into the last 32 Europa League. And we've got real hope, because we're playing a team that, to all intents and purposes, in terms of value of the squad, wage bill, revenue that the club, they're a team that should be... No, I'm not saying that they're dramatically poorer than us, but they're a team that we should be aspiring to get past on a regular basis in European football in Copenhagen. So we go with great expectation. Lovely ground. I was at it. It was a great first half performance in particular. We Edouard could have scored before he did. He scores the opening goal. I had a chance, an almost identical chance just before it, where he doesn't score. Half time, you're thinking, right, okay, we're 1-0 up here. Let's move on. The second, it could be 2, you know, should have been 2-0 up. Let's go in the second half, make it 2-0, make it 3-0 in a wee game, and make the second half a formality. Now, what then moved on from there was the second half was all Copenhagen. They were all in it. But at the game, I remember thinking, well, right, it's not too bad, because probably we've gone back out in the second half with an attitude of, yes, it'd be nice to get the second goal, but the most important thing is that we're a goal up here, and we see this game out. And although they scored, they didn't have that many chances in the second half. They did get one. So I thought, right, okay, because it was a VAR penalty, I think they got. It was mm-hmm. the first time we'd lost a penalty through VAR to take it to one each. So what were your thoughts watching the game?
It was a game of two halves, and I was so pleased at half time, because I genuinely thought, just as you've alluded to there, that we were going to go in and win this 2 or 3-0. Such was our superiority at that point. But it reminded me of a game a few years ago against Maribor in the Champions League qualifiers, where we had so much possession away from home in the first half, you think, this is really unusual. Normally when you go away from home, you're under the cosh. Normally when you go away from home, it's maybe an intimidating atmosphere. And really what had happened is we'd ran them up with them in the first half. As you said there, Edwards has probably... He deserves criticism for missing two easier chances than the goal he scored. But I just remember the heads went down a wee bit when Copenhagen equalised. We never quite get back in our groove after that. Although you will remember better than me, because you were there, that there was an opportunity in the second half for McGregor, had a 3-2, and he's coming through with a ball, and somebody peels left and somebody peels right. Now, Callum's decision making is normally very, very good, and on this occasion, he decided to use the runners as a decoy, and he tried a shot, and the shot went miles over the bar.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, you know, Callum McGregor on a good day just slips a ball inside, a perfect pass for one of the strikers to run on it, and that's a goal. And I remember thinking at the time, I hope we're not going to rue that miss. But certainly one each, didn't have any worries. I thought they were a very ordinary team. I never saw anything special. And I thought when we get them back to Celtic Park, you know, it wasn't going to be an easy game because they were a very athletic and fit team. Typical Scandinavians. They were well organised, but they didn't look anything special at home.
No. I like you, I thought, right, okay, we... First half performance, we should have been 2-up at least. It's possibly a game we should have won, but hey, let's go back to Celtic Park. If their second half performance was the best they can do, you know, we can get them at Celtic Park and we can win. That was my thoughts going into it. So we then have a home game. It's moved to the Sunday because the Europa League on the Thursday. Home to Kilmarnock. Rangers dropped points again. They drew with St Johnstone 2-2. So really you can start to see us really stretching away at this point. The team's Foster, Simonovic, Julian, so it's back to the three at the back. Frimpom, Rogic, McGregor, Christie, Taylor, Griffiths and Edward up front. Beaton and Bio. Bio got a game towards the end of it. So Kelly actually took the lead in that game. But we went on to win it. So any specific comments on that one?
I just remember feeling a wee bit edgy when I think Kilmarnock got a penalty very early doors to take the lead, and obviously there's it unnerves the crowd to a certain extent. But we managed to, you know, not only equalise, but we took the lead by half time, and I think that reassured everybody that we were okay. So at this point, there was a feeling, certainly in my mind, that we were on a roll. The momentum was with us. And in the second half, we scored again. Probably should have scored a few more if you want to be critical. But we won 3-1 in fairly convincing fashion. In the end up, considering that we were 1-0 down. And it strikes me that if we're playing these days and we lose a goal in 6 minutes, that team currently that we have at the moment are nervous wrecks and would probably fall apart. Whereas 12 months ago, basically the same squad, you know, there's not been a tremendous change in the squad. The majority of them are still available to the manager, maybe apart from Foster and Simunovic. The change in the character of the team is alarming, because I just feel now that we are a very, very vulnerable team when we lose the first goal. And I don't know if it's this thing about we don't have the fans. I didn't think that would be a factor in the season. I must admit, I thought, these guys are professionals, they're clearly better than all the other teams in the league, so you're basically just going on a pitch and playing a basic game of football without the worry about the supporters, without the worry of the atmosphere of the crowd, or sometimes the crowd can be a bonus, but sometimes the crowd can get you down. And I've watched that Celtic team this season, and it is so alarming that they seem rudderless without the crutch of the Celtic supporters beside them to cheer them on and encourage them. It's really, really concerning.
I do wonder whether when you play for a big club, and so even with no crowd there, there's always lots of pressure and awareness, that it's dead easy for things to go two ways. That when you start to win games, you can easily, quickly start to feel invincible as a person, mm-hmm. and as a player. And when you start to lose games, you can quickly start to become... you can feel the weight of the world on your shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see why playing for a big club can take you both ways for it. And maybe at the moment it's just the... You know, because you're in the papers every day. Every time you don't get a result, it's all sections of the media are talking about. So next up, excuse me, is that Copenhagen game.
Mm.
And you're going into that. I was going into that game with great confidence. Copenhagen away was the first time that we were involved in an incident with VAR and we lost a goal. Copenhagen at home was the first time we were involved in VAR and we got a goal. So the Celtic team was Forster, Ayer, Julian, Simonovic, so again three at the back, Taylor, Brown, McGregor, Forrest, Rogic, Elianussi and Edward. Subs were Bain, Beaton, Griffiths, Bio, Hayes, Bolingoli, Frimpong. It's on the subs bench that you really notice the change in the squad that, this season to last season. So, went into that game with great heart. And it's just a series of disasters that lose the goals. So what were your thoughts on it?
I have to confess, it's one of those games that when I come home for the football after having watched them play, I try not to bring it home with me. You know, if it's a good result, I'm happy. You know, all is well. If it's a bad result, I try not to sort of bring it back into the house. But I was really angry that night because, number one, if my recollection is spot on, he changed after having won all these games in this fantastic run, scoring lots of goals. He changed the shape of the team, and they brought Elianussi in at the expense of Griffiths. So he went for playing the 3-5-2 or the 4-4-2, depending, you know, whatever it is, back to the 4-5-1, and it just didn't work on the night. And again, it was an indication of things to come when they took the lead, because, you know, the whole crowd gets edgy at that point. They've cancelled out our away goal. It's going to be a hard night after this. But in fairness, the players fought on, and as you said there, we got the penalty through
VAR.
Maybe no circumstances. Edward took the penalty beautifully, and at that point, I actually thought we can actually win this in normal time. You know, if you include injury time, there's 10 minutes left to get a goal. The crowd are absolutely roaring them on at this point, and it is just beyond my comprehension how we lost those two goals. It was brutal. And it's something, the signs were there at that point, that players were making individual errors. Whether it's down to the shape of the team or the coaching or you know, everybody can analyse it and come up with different answers. But to me, that's where the rot's sitting at that point, that followed on to this season. Because I watched them that night and I thought, they're all over the place here. Nobody knew where they were playing. They were just shapeless. And you know, Copenhagen, not only did they scoring the second goal killed the tie. We needed three at that point. We were never going to get another two goals. But getting the other one at the end really rubbed it in. That made me particularly angry. And it was just the manner in which the lost goals were awful.
So the only plus side coming after that, obviously, was domestically when we were now 12 points clear of Rangers. They had a game in hand, but, you know, we knew we were romping away with it. We Scottish Cup, get to the quarterfinals of the Scottish Cup, and we have a game away to St Johnson. And it was one of those ones where I think was the goal, that was the one where Christie took a free kick and Julian was claiming he took mm-hmm. a flick on it, but it was really hard to notice whether he actually touched it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So we're through to the semi-finals and we're on course for a quadruple treble, miles ahead in the league and through in the Scottish Cup.
Mm-hmm.
We then go up to Livingston. I was at that game and we got the last minute equaliser and incredibly, Rangers lost at home to Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to Livingston and you draw 2-2 with a last minute goal, otherwise you are losing, and it feels like a victory because we go 13 points clear at the top of the league. What was your thoughts on that one?
I don't like Livingston's pitch. I know that the plastic parts aren't a great thing in general, but I think Livingston's is the worst out of three of them. And I think Livingston have a, you know, in fairness to them, it obviously works, but they've got a very basic way of playing the game, you know, an old-fashioned way of playing the game, very direct. And your man, what was his name? Dykes.
Yep.
I think, what's his first name?
Lyndon Dykes.
Lyndon Dykes. I can't remember his first name now. Lyndon Dykes had given Julian a hard time the game before, and he gave him he put him through the ringer again, to be honest. And I remember one of the goals gave a really bog standard long throw into the box, which Foster misjudged.
Yeah.
And we lost a goal. So I think all things considered, we did well to come back, and Rogic got the last minute equaliser. And as you said there, that what would normally have been perceived as a bad result actually turned out to be not a bad night, given the fact that Rangers lost to Hamilton. I remember watching it on TV and sitting next to my mate, who always has his phone on and he gets these updates. And it infuriates me a wee bit that you're sitting watching it and you hear a beep and he'll turn around and say, "That's Rangers 1-0." And you're thinking, oh God, it's just geese piece. And I remember all the way through the second half, I had one eye at the telly and one eye on his phone, waiting for this thing to beep that somehow Rangers had equalised. And it got into injury time. I had to turn around and say to him, "Is your phone working?" And he went, "Aye." And he says, "It's still 1-0 at Ibrox." And we just laughed. Because, you know, it was over at that. It was over before we played that game, to be honest. But that was the night that really, I think, the icing on the cake for us was seeing them getting beat at home with Hamilton. That was just a laughing. They were a laughing stock at that point.
They were. And so we then have what ended up being one more game. Now, actually, I remember there was some people that I knew unsure, because I think it was cold or wet. I can't remember. The weather wasn't great, and it was only St Mirren, and we were doing so well. And I actually remember saying to my dad, "Well, we're definitely going to this game, because it might be the last game we're at for a long time."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because you were just starting to see in places like France and Italy and Spain, they were starting to have their lockdowns. We weren't quite at that stage yet, but they were just starting to be, this is going to be a problem, this pandemic is a problem sort of chat going around. You forget how rapidly things escalated, because that was the 7th of March. We were at home to St Mirren and we won 5-0. I think so. What were your Elhamid got back in the squad after being out injured for quite some time. Again, it was Beaton, Julian, Ayer at the back, Taylor and Foster as wing backs, and a Griffiths hat trick, and then a McGregor penalty at the end. So, what was your thoughts around that time?
The one thing about Griffiths you need to give him credit for is he scores goals in the domestic game. He's a wonderful striker in Scotland, Scottish football. Now, it might not be Larson, it might not even be Edward or Dembele for the modern strikers that we've had, but he's a tremendous player at scoring goals. You know, I don't think you can deny that Lee Griffiths on his game is a very, very potent goal scorer. So I was really pleased for him getting a hat-trick that day. He was on fire. And I think that was something that would have carried on to the end of the season. I think Lee Griffiths was just beginning to hit top form at that point. There's a friend of mine that I go to the game with, and I actually called him up last week. I hadn't spoken to him for some time, and we were discussing this game because we go to the games together, and I haven't seen him a great deal since because, you know, lockdown and shielding and stuff like that. It's difficult to meet up with people. And the two of us were discussing, it was almost like somehow, it must have felt like the way it did in the war, when the league finished and the war started. You know, I hope I'm not being too flippant, because maybe comparing what we've got here, it isn't really a war. I suppose it's a war of sorts against a disease. But the two of us were saying there that it must have felt the way it did for grandfathers maybe in 1939, where 1 minute you're at the game, you're enjoying the football, and the next thing there's an announcement, and you think, oh my God, we're not going to, I'll be looking at, it could be a long time before we're back at Celtic Park, and we haven't been back since. So, you know, that's 10 months. We're no sign of going. I don't think we'll be back this season. I don't know if you share my pessimism, but I don't see much changing before April or May, certainly. So
it depends how quickly they get the vaccine out, because without getting into too much detail, with all the stats I've read and all the podcasts, because I'm just looking for positive news about it. And I know this might not sound positive news, but the principle of it you'll get is that something like 2/3 of all deaths in the UK have been people over 80 are in a care home.
Mm-hmm.
And 5 million people in the UK are over 80 are in a care home. So if we can get up to that, if we can get that, those 5 million vaccinated, you're immediately slashing the number of potential deaths by 2/3. And, mm-hmm. and they're talking about having that number of people done by the middle of February. They're talking about you and I being done by the middle of May. So I've got a wee bit of hope that they might have some, you know, they might have half of Hampden open for the cup final or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's my hope.
Well, I think you're a wee bit more optimistic than me, but, you know, going back to March, none of us could have envisaged that day that we wouldn't be back in Celtic Park for a year. It's quite a depressing thought, actually, because each home game, me and my son sit together in the living room, and you hear the Celtic song getting played, and you see the team running into the pitch, and your heart's bursting to go back and meet we've all got season tickets, and you know the people are in about you, and you know you haven't seen them for a long, long while, and you sort of miss the comradeship in the company. You just miss the routine as well, you know, getting up in the morning, and I know some people go to the pub before it and they meet their pals, or they go to the pub after it, and you know, it's soul destroying, absolutely soul destroying. There's a lot worse happening in the world that we kind of get a football game.
Well, I know, but you know, everything's relative in life. Yeah, you know, yeah. It's what matters to you. You know, my mate, one guy that you and I both know, he and I say the same thing. We don't drink. We don't smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Celtic's our thing. You know, exactly. other people, their things, going to the pub. And that's what they're missing most. There's other things I do in my life, you know, go to the cinema, go to the theatre, and I go to restaurants and stuff like that. But you get my point. Everybody's got their thing in life. That I've often thought, without getting too deep into it, I've often thought in the depths of winter, when I've been in a, you know, in an office, mixed office with both male and females, and again, this isn't a flippant thing. I've often thought, in a job that people are not particularly enjoying, in the depths of winter, the guys that I've worked with who've been into football get through those months slightly better than some of the women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because you've got the football midweek to look forward to. Your week's broken up in the dark November, December, January period by having midweek football. So if the job's pretty crap, Tuesday lunchtime, you're already thinking there's a game tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It raises your spirits, it definitely does, and I think in terms of mental health, which is a big thing in this day and age, it's the small things sometimes that can help you with mental health. You know, it's the fact that at the moment you maybe can't see your granny, or you can't see elderly relatives, you can't go to the football, you can't go to the cinema, the things you take for granted and the things that keep your spirits up. I do have to mention at this point that my heart goes out to my boy, 16. And he is gutted that he's not getting to the games. Absolutely, it's destroying him. You know, I'm a wee bit more, I think at a certain age you become a wee bit more pragmatic, and you can see the big picture as you get older in life. But I know, I can remember being 16, and if I was 16 and I didn't get to see Celtic for 10 months, I would have been going mental.
I tell you the other thing, but wait till he becomes 18 and girls become more important. Then there's a brief window there where it's not the be-all and end-all. But the other thing, without delving into the domestic things, my wife sees a game on the telly as not quite as important for me to have 100% attention to as... And obviously, if there's a game at home, I'm at home. I'm going to the game. So if there's a game at home, my dad comes round to mine, about 1:45, we leave the house about 2 o'clock, we go to the game, we come home, get home about, you know, 5, 5:15, something like that. And then my dad goes home from there. That's what we do. I see my brother at the game, I see my nephew at the game, and that's it, right? And there's been a few times where I've had to say, no, but this is like a home game, so imagine I'm not here. You know, or can you just, it wouldn't be the end of the world if you missed the first 5 minutes, would it? No, mm-hmm. This is a home game. Imagine I'm not here. And it may sound a petty thing, but that's also what's really bugging me about not getting the games.
I know.
My wife's perception that, well, it's you're only watching it on a laptop, so it's not as important.
The thing in our house that I think I've noticed is Suzanne never sees us at football, but if it's a home game, we're there. If it's an away game, we're either there or we're watching it at my friend's house. My friend doesn't have any kids, so he's got an empty, if you like. Our tradition is to go and watch it in his house. And we very, very rarely watch a Celtic game at home. And ever since the start of the season, she is shocked at the amount of shouting and bawling that we do at the telly. No, in a bad way or a foul mouth way or anything like that, but just the noise, more so this season, in as much as the frustration has definitely been there. And the Hearts Cup final is a case in point, because after the game, both Michael and I were drained to the point that there was very little celebration. There was celebration certainly when the final whistle went, and Hazard saved the penalty, and Ayer scored the penalty. Fantastic. But I think we all agree we went through the ringer in that game. I'll probably come on to that later, actually.
Well, we will do. But first of all, we've got to tie up season 2019-20, certainly in the league. We won the league. Mm-hmm. We won a ninth title in a row. It dragged on, and you knew you were going to get given the trophy, and the Rangers fans were. I mean, actually, as this season's panned out, even how shite we've been this season, there was not a sufficient turnaround in form that if you added the 8 games at the end of this season, at the beginning of this season, onto the end of last season, we would have still won the league. That was the whole thing about when they were claiming that we were awarded the league. We would have needed to have gone on a horrendous run, even worse than we've done this season. Mm-hmm. And they needed to turn into Brazil, 1970 or 1982. That's what they would have needed to be. Mm-hmm. There was 8 games left, and we were 13 points clear.
The frustration that I've got is we were to play them twice, and I genuinely believe we would have turned them over twice, because they were on their uppers at that point. They were in a terrible state, as I said earlier, that they become a laughing stock. So the prospect of us beating them twice, perhaps even beating them heavily twice, would have had a knock-on effect to this season.
If we'd have done it, would have been
absolutely.
There might have even been questions, big questions at Ibrox, as to whether Gerrard was to be still in charge this season.
He might not have, in all truthfulness, he might not have survived the summer if they took a couple of heavy beatings off us and maybe even had another defeat or two along the way to more mediocre opposition. But I think they were very fortunate in that you'd March, April and May allowed them to regroup. And then during the summer, they've obviously done a lot of work, because the one thing I think, you need to be magnanimous. You need to give them credit for it, is that they are very well organised. That they're not a particularly great team to watch. They don't have any what I would call outstanding players. But as a team, they are now very, very, very well coached and very well organised. And they're a very difficult team to beat.
And they've got a system.
European results as well.
Yep. And again, the other thing that people, getting back to the, everything's relative, we lost the opportunity to celebrate 9 titles in a row as fans. And the way that it's what, 90% certain we're not going to get the opportunity to celebrate 10. So that massive celebration of equaling the 9 in a row record is gone. We'll never get it back.
It's not so much that as well. It's the when we won the quadruple treble, hopefully we would have done that in May had it not been for the COVID situation. And, you know, can you imagine the celebrations winning a quadruple treble, you know, like the Celtic way, right along the Gallagate for Hampden, all the way to Celtic Park. It would have been a special, special occasion. Something that, you know, once in a lifetime, that's one of those things you would have been telling your grandkids about in years to come, and we were deprived of that as well. So it was good to win it, and I'm actually pleased that the SFA had the foresight to go through with the semi-finals and go through with the final, because it would have been horrible if we were denied a quadruple treble on the basis of not being able to play the games.
So we started off this season, we were allowed to get going, and the first home game domestically was against Hamilton. Lost a silly goal with an OG by Julian, but we won 5-1. Nice, comfortable win. It was a back to the 4-2-3-1 system. The bench was Klamala, Rogic, Young Dembele. What's ever happened to him? Mm-hmm. Soro, El Hamed, Barkaz, who just come in, and Cham, Bolingoli, and Beaton. Very familiar look to the team about it. Frimpong got a goal, Julian own goal, and an Edward hat-trick.
During the summer, I don't think any of us had any complaints. I certainly don't remember complaining much about the transfer deals.
Everybody was praising it. Everybody was commenting how much the club, absolutely, and everything that they were going through financially with the pandemic,
yep,
had kept the squad together. They'd not sold any of the first team starters, and they'd augmented it. They added to it.
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at Barkas coming in, an established goalkeeper with international experience, European experience, you've got Shane Duffy, international defender, the English Premier League experience. You've got Turnbull, who's turned out to be a bit of a gem, certainly in the last month or two. And up front, we signed Ayeti, who had a pedigree of playing, you know, with decent sides. And again, another international, a player of international standing. So at the beginning of the season, I was quite happy. More happy, probably, in as much as we kept Edward, we kept McGregor, we kept Ayer. You know, but our main assets were still there. And there was certainly, in the first couple of games, there wasn't any sign of the capitulation that was to come when autumn began to kick in.
No, well, we went to Rugby Park and we drew one each, and there was a lot of people unhappy because we'd taken the lead with Christie and then hadn't really looked like doing anything the rest of the game. And then we gifted a silly penalty to Kilmarnock, mm-hmm, to make it one each.
Do you know what? The one thing we need to mention here is the ball and goalie situation where the two games get cancelled put us in the back foot for the rest of the season, because it gave Rangers the opportunity to push ahead and take a lead. So we were always chasing their tails.
Well, and it happened straight after this Kilmarnock game.
Yeah.
And I don't understand. I don't understand why Nicola Sturgeon decided to postpone that game. Because if you remember, mm-hmm, Aberdeen had players who'd gone on a night out together, and they were criticised. But mm-hmm, but their game wasn't going to get postponed. Then the Bolingoli incident happened. Nicola Sturgeon stands up and says, "Well, Celtic and Aberdeen won't be playing for the next couple of weeks."
Mm-hmm. That incident has had a greater effect, I think, than we realised at the time, because Rangers began to build momentum at that point and get their tails up, and we found ourselves being criticised for the ball and goalie thing, getting put with Fairness Farris run about that period as well. But it was a huge blow, and really it spiralled out of control for them.
Well, we beat, you know, because the Champions League qualifiers were single games, and we were, mm-hmm, fortunate enough to get drawn at home. So we beat Reykjavik 6-0 at home. We then went up to Dundee, and we beat Dundee United 1-0 with a Ayeti last-minute winner. Again, it was a not great performance. but we got a last minute winner. So these games happen. People were being a bit accepting that these games happen.
Mm-hmm. I think that the one wee thing that began to prey in my mind was that we were needing late goals to get us out of trouble at this point. Because with the late goal at Tannadice and with the two late goals at Perth, and those were poor performances because we didn't really look like scoring up to that point. We were huffing and puffing. The team was very stale, and it needed a bit of, it needed a bit of refreshing. And he refused to I think in terms of team selection, on a personal level, I began to have concerns about the manager at that point.
Well, and this is the thing, because if you look at the results, I remember obviously Anthony Murray and I lost our rag on the podcast, and you joined the podcast halfway through, after we lost to Ferencváros, who are UEFA coefficient-wise, cost of squad-wise, wage bill of squad-wise, revenue, infinitely inferior to us in all of those matters. And we lost 2-1 and get knocked out of the Champions League by a team that we should be getting past. And I remember, because we then beat Motherwell 3-0 the following week, and I remember it was something like the stats for the Ferencváros game were very similar to the stats to the Celtic Motherwell game that on the following Sunday. You know, it was something like possession was 70-30 in Celtic's favour. Shots were the same. Shots on target were the same. And, you know, the people who were defending the manager were rightly saying, look, it was just one of these things. We beat Motherwell 3-0 with the same amount of possession, slightly fewer shots, because if my memory serves me right, we had slightly fewer shots against Motherwell. It was very similar. We played the bulk of the game in the final 30 yards from their goal. We scored three against Motherwell, and we just didn't do that against Ferencváros. And when you look at the results, actually, you're right about the impact of the postponing of the first two games, because if you look back through the results, we beat Hamilton 5-1. We draw with Kilmarnock 1 each. But we then beat Dundee United. We then beat Motherwell 3-0. We then beat Ross County 5-0. We then beat St Mirren 2-1. We then beat Livingston 3-2. We then beat Hibs 3-0. We had gone, interspersed with that, not great European performances, and I think that's what was compounding everything. But if you look at it, we then beat St Johnson 2-0. And so through to October, middle of October, you could easily look at it and say, okay, performances aren't great, but most important thing is to win games in this difficult time. And we've drawn against Kilmarnock and won every other domestic game.
We shouldn't underestimate the negative effect that Europe has sometimes on Celtic teams, even in back years and years. There was always a wee blip after a bad European result or getting put out of Europe. There was always a wee negative effect.
You remember better than me, my anecdotal recollection of the mid-80s is getting knocked out of Europe sort of October, November time. Then in the next four games we would either have a trip to Tannadice or a trip to Pittodrie, and we would either have Dundee United or Aberdeen coming to Celtic Park, and we'd have a dreadful run in the next four or five games after getting knocked out of Europe. Partly because we were going to Tannadice and Pittodrie and they were doing well in Europe, but that's my recollection of the 80s. Well, getting knocked out of Europe then being shite for four or five games.
That's true, but in fairness to the team in those days, we normally come out at the other side, and after the new year, we would put a good run together, and generally, we would, more often than not, we would go on and win the league. But this season, I don't know, I was very nervous coming into the Rangers game in the middle of October. And I think I'm right in saying if we'd have won that game, we'd have went above them. And with a game in hand, was it two games in hand? We would have went above them if we'd won our games in hand. I think that's what it was. So there was a lot riding in that. And Neil Lennon's team selection that day absolutely disgusted me.
Yeah, we went into that game they'd drawn two games and we'd drawn one. They'd played 10 and we'd played 9.
Yeah.
So I remember going into that game thinking, we've not been playing well this season, but all that matters is we don't lose because we've got a game in hand over them.
Yeah.
So if we just don't lose this game, we are only one, at that point we were 1 point behind with a game in hand. So most important thing is just don't lose it. Set up the team to not lose. And if we win, we are 2 points clear with a game in hand. If we don't win, we're a point behind them with a game in hand. That's fine.
His team selection that day was awful. He played Kamala up front, and it's not a criticism of the boy personally, but there was nothing to suggest. If Kamala had scored goals in the games previously, you would have saw the logic in playing him. And I remember he was very cumbersome. The Rangers defenders had him in their pocket that day. And I think he hung the boy well, shoot to dry as well, because...
Well, he hadn't started a game since the Hamilton game that I'd mentioned last season. Suddenly he comes in.
Yeah.
My issue was he wanted to play 3-5-2, and Julian was out, injured. I think, was it Beaton and El Hamed had both had...
Yeah, the coronavirus.
Coronavirus.
Ryan Christie was out as well.
Ryan Christie was out and Edward was out. We had, which is one of the things that again, the people who were defending Lennon, their point right the way through till New Year there has been, well, he had the games postponed and then the Celtic Rangers game, the Rangers game at Celtic Park, he had Julian out injured. He had Edward, Beaton, El Hamed and Christie missing because of coronavirus stuff.
You know, that's a big loss. I'm not making excuses when I say that. It's genuinely half the team and those guys are quality players who would have played a major part in that game. But go back to the boy Welsh. I think he almost played him in the right back position. He never looked comfortable throughout the game.
We played 3-5-2 that day, and he was he was the right hand side of a three.
Just he didn't look comfortable in that formation, and even in the midfield, I've been saying for ages, and anybody who listens to us regularly, I've been saying that when we play Rangers and you play 4-2-3-1, the two holding midfield players. Brown and McGregor have been overrun against Rangers because of that formation, and you know, as I said,
the problem was that day he played 3-5-2.
But it just, as I said, it was the team was shapeless.
Yeah, and the thing that struck me was the midfield was a flat three. Excluding the two wing backs, and so there was this mass. The ball wasn't part of the problem for Kamala was the ball wasn't getting anywhere near him. Because we weren't playing a diamond or anything. We weren't playing a guy who was between those two whole midfield players and the striker. There was just nothing. I remember getting my agitation that day was he had two centre-halves in Ayer and Duffy. And then he wanted to play 3-5-2. So he sticks Welsh in, who hasn't started a game since March, to give you the three at the back. Because Julian's out injured, and because we let Simonovic go, and Beaton was out, and El Hamed was out. So my irritation was, see if you don't have the players to play 3-5-2.
Don't play it.
Don't play it. He had the players to play 4-2-3-1 or 4-4-2. More 4-2-3-1, he had the players to play that day, and he didn't play 3-5-2.
Fate's a funny thing, because there was an opportunity, a really, really good chance. A Rangers defender made a mistake, can't remember who it was, and Elie Anoussi ran onto a bouncing ball, and he just had McGregor to beat, and it was a terrible effort. It went about 5 feet over the bar. You know, he wasn't even close, and I remember thinking to myself that day, these games are decided by fine margins. If we equalise at that point, if he takes his chance the way he should have, then there's every reason to think we might have went on and won that game, because again we get the initiative back after having lost a daft goal, and hopefully we would the worst you were getting probably would have been a draw, I think, the way things had, you know, the way things had turned out. But again, you know, we have been riddled this season by mistakes in every area of the park. You know, the goalkeeper, I don't think's the greatest. I think he's mediocre.
Well, that's what I was going to say. If we go through, because Laxalt made his debut that day. He'd only just signed, and he suddenly throws Laxalt straight into the team because Taylor had been getting criticised. He goes 3-5-2 when we don't have the players for it, and chucks Welsh in with his first start since March, and now Welsh has completely disappeared and isn't even getting on the bench. His two up front are Klamala and Elianoussi. Elianoussi, who, yes, he's our top scorer this season, but he's a guy who plays on the left. He's a right-footed guy who plays on the left and cuts in.
Yeah.
It was just... Again, this was my irritation with the... And Frimpong, who's not... Who's, you know, young players go through peaks and troughs and are helped by good coaches who take them through. It just struck me as... He didn't have the players for 3-5-2, and it was a game where the most important thing was not to lose. And I just think if he played 4-2-3-1... with the people he had available, we would have had a better chance that day.
We were a mess that day, but I think I don't want to blame one player in particular, but you know, if that chance Foster Griffiths or even Edward, then you would like to think that they're scoring there, because there isn't anybody near them, and it's a bouncing ball. All you've got to do is control a lob over the goalkeeper, you know, what should be a simple process for a quality striker. And Elianoussi, you know, as I said, he wasn't even close. He skied over the bar. I'm not pointing him personally here. I'm just highlighting what might have happened. You know, as I say, there are small margins in these games. I mean, we saw that at Ibrox last week, when we have the ascendancy. McGregor's shot goes by the post, and another day that creeps in the post. Griffiths is. Effort that McGregor saved, another day that goes in, and you know the fine margins again, whereby the ball strikes Callum McGregor and bounces into the net for a corner, which is a freak goal. So as I said, you know, sometimes you can argue that we're being unlucky, and you can also argue that you make your own luck here. And if Elianoussi had scored that day, our season could have turned it a whole lot different.
Yeah, and again, when you look at the results, it's not as bad as... The results are not as bad as the season has felt to this point. We've won games. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, we squeaked past Ross County 3-2. We squeaked past St Mirren 2-1. Even though we beat Ross County 5-0. Sorry, we squeaked past Livingston 3-2. Even though we beat Ross County rather 5-0 away... that was the famous one where Dermot Desmond said that the manager conceded it was a 2-1 performance. Mm-hmm. It was some of the European results that were really lumping the negativity around the club. The performances themselves weren't great.
Well, it has to be said, though, again, fate has played a huge part this season. In terms of bad luck, I mean, we were first seeds in that Europa League draw, and I remember looking at the big the list of the teams that were there, and it was pot 1 and pot 2, pot 3 and pot 4, and I'm thinking, you know, if you're lucky here, but you get some teams that you've never really heard of, and on the basis of last season when we won our group, there was every reason to think we would do well in this one as well. And I remember when the draw was made, and I thought to myself, by the way, that this is any AC Milan team and at any stage is going to be a difficult proposition. Any French team is going to be a difficult proposition as well. But I have to say, the disappointing one was playing Prague. Not only did Prague beat us, they took 8 goals off us in 2 games.
And it was a reserve team.
Those performances were an embarrassment. Embarrassment not only for the team, but for the fact that Lennon's tactics in both occasions were pitiful.
And that's the thing about the Rangers game that did it for so many people. It was the insipid nature of the performance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We were just never looked like getting back into that game. We followed the Rangers game with a home defeat against Milan. Mm-hmm. You know, second half, you know, 2-0 at half time, didn't look great. Elianoussi makes it 2-1, and and you're watching that thing, and you know, we can do something here.
Mm-hmm.
And then they make it 3-1 with not great defending at the back. And then there's the 3-3 away at Aberdeen, which you could have looked at that in two different ways. We came from behind in a time when things were being criticised. We came from behind twice.
Mm-hmm.
McGregor, they scored with a penalty. McGregor scores. They scored again, and then Griffiths scores. And then Griffiths goes straight again to make it, and we go 3-2 up. And you're thinking, right, okay, we should see this out. And then they get a penalty to make it 3-3. Domestically, that's when the Rangers game is when the domestic results really started to go. The performances hadn't been great, but that's when the results started to go down.
You know, the Aberdeen thing, just to touch on that there, that what has really, really frustrated me and makes me angry is the fact that if we played teams, even in Europe, and they play these off the park, or they scored a 30-yarder goal for the winner, you would think, what, you need to take your hat off to that, you know, this is terrific stuff. The three goals we lost against Aberdeen were absolutely pitiful. And to lose one goal would have been bad enough, but to lose three, another thing as well is, when you get to 3-2, that game should be done. And the boy was allowed to, I can't remember the fella's name, the Aberdeen boy for the I'm sure it was the penalty. He ran by about three Celtic players.
That's right, yeah.
And Sorrow would have dealt with that. And I was getting frustrated with Lennon. I'm thinking, Scott Brown is puffing out his arse in the last 5 minutes here. He's been a great servant, and I'm not going to criticise Scott Brown. He'll be doing as a Celtic legend. A wonderful captain. He's been a leader on and off the park for 10 years. But, you know, you've bought a guy who's bursting to play, and we're dying to see. And it's an area of the park that we need fresh legs. Why would you not bring... It infuriates me.
So, you had a great result against Lille in the UEFA Cup. We were 2-0 up at half-time. Mm-hmm. And again, this is where the defensive frailties really started to show. We were 2-0 up at half-time against Lille. See the game out. And it finishes 2-2. But then we go to Hampden for the Scottish Cup semi-final from last season. And we win 2-0 mm-hmm. against Aberdeen. It's pretty comfortable.
The one thing about the Aberdeen game that sticks in my mind is they had two good chances before we scored. And again, it gets back to the vulnerability of the team. Had Aberdeen took the lead that day, we were in trouble. But in fairness to them, you know, we rode the luck a wee bit. But the two goals we scored were two cracking goals. And Tom Rogic had come back at that point, and I was hoping that he was going to be the conductor of the improvement that was going to come, because he had a terrific game at Hampden that day, and he played the way that we all know that he can play. He'd been out a long time. But I think that was a false dawn. I think Tom's sort of reverted to type.
Yeah. So following getting into the cup final against Aberdeen, one of the problems with us playing that is it's another game mm-hmm. that we're not. So we're now two games behind Rangers. And so the mental pressure starting to, as they say in cricket, they call it scoreboard pressure. We're 9 points behind them. Now, if we win mm-hmm. the two games in hand, it's only three. But the mental pressure, and then, of course, we lose 4-1 at home to Sparta Prague, which is their reserve team because they've got so many players out with COVID and things like that. And you're really starting to get the criticism from the supporters. But we then go to Motherwell, and Elianoussi gets a hat-trick, and we score 4 and win 4-1.
Yeah. There is the odd game that we did hit for them, but there was always that underlying feeling that they were still vulnerable, and that players were still prone to making blunders. And the other thing as well is we're chomping changing the goalkeepers at this point. You know, you went from Barkas to Bain, back to Barkas, then the boy Hazard comes in later on, and now you're back to Barkas again. So the one thing that all good teams have got is, you know, you've got a reliable goalkeeper, and the backbone of the team is the goalkeeper and the back, the two central defenders. And we've never really had that this season on a consistent basis. We've chopped and changed, and we've had injuries, and we've had guys out with COVID and God knows what else. It's been a hard slog.
And at this point, actually, when you review the year and you look at the results, you can see why, again, the board's attitude was that they were sticking by Neil Lennon, because domestically the results are not as the results, not the performances. The results are not that bad. We are 9 points behind Rangers, but we've got two games in hand. We win the two games in hand and we're 3 points behind Rangers, which is one Rangers game. But for the fans who've been agitating against Lennon, well, look at the European performances when we're playing half-decent teams. They're the standard that Rangers are. So this is what we might expect when we play Rangers. Mm-hmm. And we've been just scraping some of these games. We draw two each at Easter Road in the middle of this real negativity when, as you say, the manager's chopping and changing. Miraculous, actually, because we were 2-0 down to Hibs. Edward gets a penalty and then lacks out, scores for the club. Mm-hmm. But it was interspersed by another 4-1 drubbing by Sparta Prague in that run.
At this point, we totally came off the rails. I mean, we should have lost that game at Easter Road to intents and purposes.
Yes.
But I think we got a jail away, but one of our friends had described something at that time that sticks in my mind. That, you know, we're going for 10 in a row, and it's meant to be a big season. We kind of get to the game, so everybody's watching it on TV. But to give them their credit, Rangers had now started to play well. Not only were they playing well, but they were getting results. They still haven't lost a league game this season, and we're in January. So in a normal league season, Rangers might have lost a game and drawn another couple, which puts our results more into context, because then the gap isn't as bad and the fans won't be so frustrated, particularly because it's the 10 in a row where the senses are highlighted and we're desperate to win it, to make a record. Now, the way he described it to us was, it's like watching the old John Wayne film where the cowboys are in the fort and the Indians are beating their drums outside doing a war dance, and you know they're coming. You know, you get that sense of doom inside you. You just don't feel good about what's happening. And I actually laughed at that, because that was true during those dark winter evenings through November, December, when we really went off the rails and there was protests at Celtic Park and all the rest of the stuff, because there was that feeling somehow that we are under siege here. You know,
yeah, and again, if you just doing a looking at the figures here, you'd be looking at it going, what? So we were 9 points behind, we had two games in hand, so we win the two games in hand. So effectively, we were 3 points behind. We were 1-1 away from a quadruple treble, and the Frans were attacking the team bus. For fuck's sake, what was going on? That's like, I'm sure in 20 years' time, people will look at that and go, wait a minute, I'm looking at these results here. What the hell was going on at that point? Why was everyone going so mental?
I think you need to separate the results from the performances. The performances were abysmal. And the team selection has to be questioned, and his tactics need to be... Everything has to get questioned here at this point. Team selection, tactics, motivation, substitutions. We were a shambles. Those two home games, where we lost to Ross County and we drew at St Johnson, are the worst two experiences I've got of watching a Celtic team at Celtic Park. At least going back to the days of Tony Mowbray. It's that bad.
Yeah, and that was the problem. It was a draw at Hibs, lose to Ross County, draw at St Johnson, interspersed with dreadful European performances, 4-1 twice, bookended Sparta Prague, chucking those 8 goals in, and then losing another 4 goals to AC Milan.
Well, AC Milan, we went 2-0 up. And you think to yourself, even if we get a draw here, this is a morale booster. And then as soon as AC Milan scored a goal to get it back to 2-1, you just knew there was going to be capitulation. There wasn't any, you know, when AC Milan equalised, you didn't see any tactical change. You know, he substitutions but were questionable. You know, he either brings on like for like and nothing changes in terms of the team shape, or he makes a substitution and you think, what is he doing? You know, seriously, what is he trying to achieve here?
I was saying to someone this week that if you have watched football all your life and you have any sort of understanding of the game, you can have a good guess about what the substitution the manager's going to make. You might not agree with the substitution, but you can know the way the manager likes to play. You can, you know, I remember regularly, particularly under Strachan, guessing his substitutions, probably 90% of the time, 5 minutes before he would make it. You'd be watching the game, say we were 2-0 up and it was 75 minutes. You'd be watching a game and you'd go, I think he's going to take X player off and put Y on to see this game out. Within the next 5 minutes, he would make that substitution. You could spot it coming. Mm-hmm. You could see it with Brendan Rodgers as well. You know, a lot of the time you had a good idea. You know, we went to 10 men, he's going to take somebody off and put a striker on. Because when we went to 10 men under Brendan Rodgers, we always went to two up front. We went from a 4-2-3-1 to a 4-3-2. Because he always wanted the opposition to be worrying about what we were doing. And so you're watching the team, you're watching the play, that manager, you know how he thinks, you know his systems that he likes to play. If he tweaks it slightly and goes from this system to that system, you know what he's going to do. Even Lennon in his first season, occasionally in games, you would see him, he would go from his lopsided 4-4-2 into sometimes take to a 3 at the back. But you could predict. The whole thing for me this season is, it's almost as if Lennon's sitting there going, the team's not right. I've got 5 substitutions to make, so I'm going to make all 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember I was very fortunate to have been to something. I was at a table, and Chris Davis was at the table. And Danny Lennon was at the table. So Danny Lennon's quizzing him. I think Danny Lennon was trying to get a job as a scout or a coach at Celtic or something. He's asking all these questions about Chris Davis. And the thing I remember him saying, and subsequently, I remember this being spoken about with Brendan Rodgers at transfer windows as well. The famous transfer window when he signed Compere, Hendry and Musonda. I remember him commenting, I remember Peter Lowell commenting, and when the thing I was at, Chris Davis commenting, that they'd done the analysis of when you wanted to do squad rotation or if you had a transfer window. And their analysis was that if you wanted to build a squad, you really needed 3 transfer windows. And if you want, not that he was any good in the transfer market, but also if you are changing teams for squad rotation or league cups, never make more than 3, maximum 4 player changes, was their point. Because the minute you make more than, minute you go to 4 or more first team player changes, it disrupts everything too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep thinking back now to the transfer window that we had that everybody praised. And, you know, I was one of them saying that they held on to the players and they've gone and signed first team players. But they signed about 5 players that were designed for the first team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Laxalt signed, Barkas is signed, Tumbo is signed,
Duffy
is signed, Ayeti is signed, yeah. Elianus is re-signed.
Mm-hmm.
So easy with hindsight, so I'm not criticising them for it, but I now think back to those comments of Brendan Rodgers and Chris Davis, and it was that they'd analysed the stats, they'd analysed team after team after team and their stats. When they made too many changes, that's when they dropped points in League Cup games.
A funny thing there, we were discussing earlier there in the early months of the year how poor the bench was, if you like. Do you know what I mean? You were reading the names out and you're thinking, geez, well, there's not a lot there. Now, I actually think it's just going to sound a crazy thing that Neil Lennon has got too many good players to choose from. And somehow he can't make his mind up. One week it's Cham, the next week it's Rogic, the next week it's Elianusi in the wing the next week. You know, there's been no continuity this season. Really, what happened in January, February, early March was he had a rump of the squad to choose from, and he picked the best formation for them, and it showed. We played with a purpose. We gained a lot of momentum. And really what's happened this season is, you know, virtually every position, there's been chopping and changing every week. The one thing I always think as a fan is, I don't know if anybody else feels like this, when I hear the team getting read out and you hear that you're going goalkeeper and you think, oh, aye. And it back three, A, B and C, and you think, yes. And the midfield two, and you think, oh, yeah, that's good. And then you hear a name and you think, what is he picking him for? It just jumps out at you, and that rings alarm bells with me as a supporter, because when you've got a settled team and you know your formation, I mean, what the hell made him change that two up front formation that was so good in January, February, March, and then get into the start of the season and then just throw it out the window?
I'll tell you what, because he started the season with 3-5-2. I'll tell you what made him change it: not having two fit strikers.
Well, there's a criticism, because I'm a Griffiths fan and he's let us down badly on several occasions. And then Edward had COVID and was out, and Ayeti, frankly, has never looked at, I don't think he's ever looked 100% fit. I don't think you'll see the best of Ayeti next season if he gets a pre-season under him.
You're right. Ayeti looks to me like one of these players who needs a run of four or five games in the team.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, it's actually catch 22 of,
we can't give him it.
We can't give him it, because if we had Edward on full form, for argument's sake, so say Edward was playing fantastic and we decide to go with two up front and Edward was banging in the goals, you could give Ayeti four or five games in a row, because mm-hmm. Edward's scoring them.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, I do wonder whether. Just one or two things with Edward. I remember sending a message to WhatsApp group that we're in right at the very beginning of the season that my concern is that Edward is a big game player, and it's a subconscious thing. I don't think he consciously doesn't try in the games against in the lesser games and tries. I think it's the big atmosphere mm-hmm. creates the circumstances in his mind. Subconsciously, he delivers. And my concern at the beginning of the season was, no game would feel like a big game this season. So if you get a big game player who only mm-hmm. switches on for the big games, and no game feels like a big game.
I agree with you totally. And do you not think that Dembele was the same? I mean, I used to get infuriated with Dembele. You'd be playing the likes of Motherwell or Hearts or something. And I'm not saying he wasn't trying, but... You know, it was minimum effort for Dembele. It was almost as if he couldn't be asked playing against the B teams.
Well, I always try and put things in, try and think of my own circumstances. And obviously, I'm not a professional footballer, right? But if I think back to when I play sport, right, that's what I always think about. And see, when I played, when I was a schoolboy football, and as I say, I know it's not the same standard, but the principle, hopefully, you'll get.
It's the same. Mm-hmm.
I was shite in training. And I wasn't trying. But when I played in a game, I played much better. I didn't make mistakes. It wasn't a conscious effort to concentrate more or concentrate less, but I wasn't as focused. So I concentrated more in those games. It's like the only sport I now still play is golf. And if I'm playing golf with people that I know very well, I don't play as well as when I'm playing golf with strangers. Because when I'm playing golf with my mates, I'm chatting more. I'm not concentrating to the same level. And I hit the odd crap shot. When I'm playing with strangers, I'm maybe not chatting as much. And I'm also marginally more slightly nervous, because you're playing with people that you don't know. You don't want them thinking you're an arse and you're shite.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a conscious thing, it's a subconscious thing that my game is slightly better with strangers than it is with people that I know. And when I played football when I was younger at schoolboy level, I wasn't shite in training. If I played for a new team and I went to training, I was good in training for the first 2-3 months. Because I was on edge. I had that edge to me.
Yeah.
Mentally on edge. Mentally had to concentrate, because these were people I didn't know and I had to show myself. But gradually, well, I just need to turn up. I'm only going through the motions with the training, because the real thing matters on the Saturday. And And I think of that when I think of, you're right, someone like Dembele, someone like Viduka, for I know he bugged you, and someone like,
Big Dembele is a case in point, because he would have mediocre performances against teams in the SPL, and then you would play Man City in the Champions League and the big man turns up, and then you would play a cup final or even a semi-final, the big man turns up. You play against Rangers, he never let us down, because that atmosphere, and I think that atmosphere, he fed off that.
Puts them on that, just that wee bit of extra edge. And but the other thing I often wonder about them as well, particularly with a striker, when you're playing in a big game and you know I'm only going to get a split second here, the ball comes and you hit it and it's bang, goal. You make the split second decisions. Mm-hmm. I also think, and you can see this with the amount of times that Edouard has beaten six players and loses it on the trying to beat the seventh player in the box. I think they also subconsciously know that they are vastly superior to the Ross County, the Hamilton, the Dundee United, the Kilmarnock defenders. And so they take that extra touch because they think they can. I can just take that extra touch to get, there's a bit of space there that I can move into. I can generate that extra space to have the perfect shot because they're not that good. Plus, if it doesn't work this time, I'll get another chance because they're not that good. I don't think it's a conscious thing. I just think it's that subconscious thing of I can take the extra touch. Whereas when you're playing against an elite team and the atmosphere's there and the crowd's going, I've just got to take this and go.
It's probably a touch of arrogance. And I think continental players have got that a wee bit more than what Scottish players have. That's the reason that I would never let Griffiths go. Right? Despite his shortfalls and the issues that we've had with him in the last couple of years, as much as Dembele and Edouard will win you the cup final, they'll win you a European game, they'll turn it on against Rangers. But when you're needing a goal in the last 10 minutes at McDermott Park or Tannadice or whatever, Griffiths is your man. Because he just has that knack of getting a goal. He's an actual goal scorer. He's probably not got the technical ability that Dembele and Edouard had, maybe at a higher level. But he's very much in the Scottish game, typical of the mould of the players that we've had in the past. Guys like Scott McDonald, guys like Gary Hooper, guys maybe, if I get back a wee bit further, like Brian McClare, who weren't the most technically gifted players, but they knew the road to goal.
Oh, I don't think you could put Brian McClare in that. I think Brian McClare is a very technically gifted player. Maybe...
He went on a great success at Manchester United, but he changed his role. He went from being a 30 goals a season striker.
I would put you in McGarvey. I would put your big favourite McGarvey in that category.
Frank, for me, I think Frank was a big game player. I think any time, look at his record against Rangers, look at his record in Europe, look at his record in cup finals. Frank didn't let you down. But the point I'm making here is that guys who score regularly against, I'm being unkind with describing them like this, the mediocre teams, but you still need to score against them.
And actually, McGarvey reminds me of Griffiths in that there's a guy who scored goals and eventually the manager lost patience with, and I'm only talking from afar, you didn't have the same level of gossip and all that stuff that you've got now. But Peter Lee, the manager, lost patience with whatever his off-field behaviour was. And a guy who we thought was banging in the goals suddenly disappears from the team, in the club.
Again, that's fate though, Harry, because if COVID hadn't have happened when it happened, Griffiths is on fire. We've touched on that earlier. That fate has been very unkind to us, and as much as it came, COVID came at a bad time. If COVID had happened, I don't know. Say, for example, if COVID had happened in November when we were going through that horrible period, that would have dug us out a hole. If you play football for 3 months over the period that we were crap. But really what happened is it came at a time when we were playing the best football of the season.
Yeah, and the other thing that I think, and again, a couple of podcasts when Anthony and I, or when one I did with Hugo James, when we commented on Scott Brown, and people thought it was a personal attack on Scott Brown. We weren't making a personal attack on Scott Brown. We were pointing out that Scott Brown's 35, and for 2-3 years, Celtic fans have been saying he can't keep going on forever.
No.
And I also wonder, as part of that, not just as age caught up with him, as it catches up with all of us,
I also wonder whether the other issue with Scott Brown is that at that critical age, to have 5 months out was a double whammy of a lack of keeping playing football as he's aging, compounded the decline of his ability to get around the park.
I heard an interview with Ronnie Whelan, the old Liverpool player, the other day, and he was talking about how when he was put into the Liverpool team, he took the place of Ray Kennedy. Now, Ray Kennedy was a fantastic player. He was one of the best players in England in the 1970s. He was a thoroughbred footballer. And Ronnie Whelan says he couldn't believe that Bob Paisley had said, "You're a new son, but we're going to sell Ray Kennedy." And he thought, he's selling one of the best players in England. But what Liverpool did at that time, and they were brilliant at it, was being able to analyse when a player was past his best and move him on when he still had some saleable value. And more importantly, they had a ready-made replacement in the reserves. And Whelan took the place of Kennedy. Ian Rush took the place of David Johnson. I think Craig Johnson took the place of Terry McDermott, all within the space of a couple of months. And it was a seamless transition. And I always think back to that Liverpool team. They were so good at that. Now, it seems a bit cruel in some ways to have three guys who have been brilliant servants to you and move them on. But you know, we can't be sentimental here. I love Scott Brown and I love Neil Lennon. But Scott Brown's time is up, frankly. And Neil Lennon, I hesitate to say it, he's probably... He's not going to be the manager in August, let's face it.
No. One of the things we talked about when we did the Nine the Road podcasts was the two or three occasions when either the team nearly didn't win the league and had a lot of run of bad performances during that nine, or when we actually didn't achieve the 10. And one of the things we talked about was in the seasons where we perform poorly, mainly in Europe and in cups, or the season when we lost the 10, there was a player or two who was past it that Jock Stein had kept. And I remember us talking about the podcast, because I remember saying that I'd read something with Alex Ferguson, who obviously became very brutal at Man United, of just, right, that's it, you're gone. And Ferguson saying that the one thing that Jock Stein had taught him was never to be sentimental about players. And I often wonder whether that advice to Alex Ferguson came out of Jock Stein being sentimental about Big Billy and keeping him in the team for just a season too much, or one or two of the other lines. I mean, he was brutal with some of the other lines. You know, it's a strange mixture, but there was a couple that when we did it, and you've got to have it's a very brave manager who, after the seasons that Scott Brown has had of late, it would have been a very brave manager to say, right, thanks very much, Scott, but I'm putting sorrow into the team now for this season.
But the thing is, you can phase players out gradually. You know, Scott Brown, if you play Ross County at home, or even if you maybe go to one of the plastic pitches away from home that he's used to playing over the years, will do you a good job. He is not finished as a player per se. He just can't give you 50, 60 games a season like he's done for 10 years. You can only go to the well so many times. Another thing as well, I think that, going back to the tactics of 4-2-3-1, I was desperate in the European away games to play Scott Brown with Sorrow as the two in front of the back four to have a protection for the defence, particularly when our defence is so vulnerable and quite weak, and take Callum McGregor out of that and push Callum forward into the three, where he does his best work as an attacking player. I mean, the goal Callum McGregor scored at Pittodrie that got us back into the game, he should never be played in a deep midfield role. He should be playing behind the striker. He's such a clever player.
Well, but then where'd you put Turnbull, who's been a fantastic
turnaround? I know, but you've got a three there, right? You know,
but then Turnbull goes either to the left side or the right side.
Well, I'm not saying play Callum in the 10 role. I'm saying he could play off the left or even off the right hand side.
The thing for me is, I don't even think you need to do that. You just need to have a mobile
has been proved with Sorrow. You just need to have a guy who's got the mobility that Scott Brown had 4+ years ago. And that frees Callum McGregor to play and be the playmaker.
Sorrow reads a game better than Scott Brown ever did. I mean, the one thing Scott Brown was famed for was his energy, was his combative style of play, what was the way that he became a great captain. He inspired the players around about him in the way that Roy Aitken had done a generation before. But what I've seen of Sorrow, I'm very impressed, because he doesn't need to tackle a lot of the time. He intercepts, he reads the game. His positional sense is quite uncanny. The first couple of games he played, I was overjoyed because I thought, this guy's got something. You can just tell that when we have possession, he's always available. And the other thing as well that he's got an advantage over Scott Brown is he passes the ball forward with great effect. He finds the guy in the three from playing in the two, and that's something we've not been doing for a long, long time.
So, and that then gets us on to, as we come to the culmination of the 2020 review, we're out of Europe, so he plays the fringe players, for want of a better way of putting it, at home to Lille, and we win 3-2, we still concede silly goals, but we win the game and we have a decent style of play, and it gives us hope. And then from there, we go on a run, and again, getting back to the protection of the defence being part of the... You know, everybody's been pointing fingers at the defenders, and the manager's been chopping, changing the goalkeepers. And I have been, and other people online have been saying, no, the problem here is the midfield. The reason the defence looks shite is because they've got no protection from the mid. People, you talked about the third, the Aberdeen penalty, where they just ran through the middle of the pitch. It's the middle of the pitch where people have been running through. So we then play Sorrow and Turnbull against Lille, get the result. He keeps Sorrow and Turnbull in the league, in the team. And I'm going to get to the cup final, the quadruple treble in a minute. Kilmarnock 2-0, clean sheet. Ross County 2-0, clean sheet. Hamilton 3-0, clean sheet. Dundee United 3-0, clean sheet. Just that little tweak in the middle of the park of Sorrow and Turnbull, who've been at the club, Turnbull since the summer and Sorrow since this time last year. Playing those two players, we've suddenly looked solid at the back. You know, we've looked fairly solid at the back. The goalkeepers haven't really had anything to do. The difference in that group of games, just going through, was the Hearts game where he chucked Brown back in and we draw. I mean, again, that was another one where half time it's 2-0 going on 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, miraculously, because Hearts suddenly just start running through the middle of our midfield, we then get to extra time and penalties.
The thing again is it shows you that normally when a Celtic team take a 2-0 lead, you can be relied upon to go and win by 3 or 4. And what this season has proved is this team, I keep using this word, we're so vulnerable, because a 2-0 lead at half time against Hearts in the cup final, we're sitting in our living room thinking, by the way, you could get 5 or 6 here if you play your cards right and you do all the things that we hope we're going to do. And then just after half time, Hearts equalise and they get their tails up, and you could just tell that the mood of the team changed. Nobody wanted the ball. The guys were beginning to hide. And when Hearts equalised, there was actually the feeling at that point, you know, that don't be surprised if they win here. The Griffiths got us out of hole. He gets us to 3-2. The game should be done at that point, but no, we still lose a third goal because that centre of defence was just like poi. And Hearts, you know, it's a bad day when somebody like Robbie Nielsen tells you after the game, we analysed Celtic and we spotted their weaknesses and we went for them.
But their weakness, any Celtic fan could have told you the weakness. If you're playing Scott Brown, just run through the middle because he's not got the legs to chase somebody anymore. Just run at, just to people with pace, sitting just a wee bit deeper where the holding midfielder is, and the holding midfielder can't keep up with him. What was it? Brown was booked in 6 of the first 7 games or something like that. Mm-hmm. He was booked. And he was booked in every one of the games that Brown's been booked in, I think, this season, and certainly in the earlier part of the season. he was booked pulling a guy down or pulling a guy back because he got past him for pace.
Right. And the old Scott Brown would have probably get back to the other side of the guy and tackled him and took the ball off him. But as I said there, when you get to 35, is it that you can no longer do what you did 10 years ago when you were 25. And as you said earlier, this isn't a criticism of Scott Brown. You know, like, look, one day probably at the end of the season, we'll do a podcast and it'll be, if, say, for example, when Scott Brown leaves, and it'll be solely in Scott Brown's achievements, of which there are many. But as you and I have already discussed there is no room for sentiment. And Lennon disappointed me that he didn't play Sorrow from the beginning. And then if you get a 3-0, maybe 4-0 lead, you bring Brown on at the end to go and lift the trophy. But there's one other point I want to make here. The game against Lille, it was a really exciting game, and we scored 3 cracking goals. And we lost 2 bad ones, but we scored 3 really, really good goals against Lille.
Yeah.
And one of the things that impressed me that night was that Ewan Henderson came on as a sub early in the game. And against really quality opposition, that boy was beating players in midfield and charging forward from midfield, leading attacks. And we haven't seen him since. And you think to yourself, where is the encouragement for that boy that he can't even get a place on the bench above some of the duds that are getting games out there, that they're getting named on the bench? If you were Ewan Henderson in the noon, you've played your heart out, you've won 3-2, you've in some people's eyes, he was the man of the match. If you remember that night, that he was getting such a good write-up. We haven't seen him since. I just, that kind of thing frustrates me with Lennon to the point that I lose all faith in him.
I mean, I think the one sort of defence I would give at Lennon, I think Liam, sorry, Ewan Henderson needs to get to the gym, bulk himself up a bit more. You know, but that aside, I think what Lennon, and again, some would say, well, he's, it's always the get out that, you know, it's the standard phrase that I remember Derek Johnson using ad nauseum on Clyde. I've not listened to Clyde for about 10, 12 years now, so I can't even tell if he's still on there. But it's the phrase of, yes, but the manager sees them in training, right? So I get that bit. The manager sees players every day. But I step back, I look at it and go, right, Dembele's finished at Celtic. He's obviously not going to. Now maybe, you know, Lennon might turn around and say, aye, because, you know, his problem is he's just not physical enough. And see in training, he just gets passed off the ball all the time, doesn't manage to do anything once he's playing again. You know, so maybe that's the thing. But there's Dembele, nowhere. Sorrow is 21, 22. So he's a young player. Sorrow, nowhere near the team. Ewan Henderson, nowhere near the team. The only exception to that is Frimpong, but we went and signed the guy Luca Connell from Bolton because he was getting first team football in the English Championship, and he's not even getting on the bench. Now again, I'm not watching any games. You know, people might say, well, do you know what? That's because he's not capable of being a first team player. But I also look at, these are players who we've brought them into the club playing first team football for another team.
Mm-hmm.
And they're patently not developed.
No. Do you remember what was the game at the beginning of the season? Was that Hibs friendly at Celtic Park?
Yes.
And one of the first games that was showed that the Celtic TV did the experiment.
Yeah, the trial run, yeah.
He played a sort of fringe team that day. I mean, Griffiths was up front. Sorrow was in midfield, played well, but that boy Connell was a man of the match that day. He had a cracking left foot, he was pinging passes all over the place. To me, it looked a wee bit heavy, but I think that was maybe to do with the fact that maybe he wasn't match fit, but he hadn't played 90 minutes for a period. He would lose that with playing games. But that's another curious one that you've never seen him. He's never, in all the weeks that we've been crying out for new players, we've been crying out for a bit of refreshing the team. He never went to Connell either, which I think's odd. And he's not young, by the way. Connell's 21, 22. But when you get to that age, if you're anywhere near the first team, then you've got a big problem.
And another thing you mentioned earlier about too many players to choose from, maybe not too many players, but too many players who are very, very similar. So obviously we're in a WhatsApp group with Eddie Pearson, and he obviously Greg Taylor's his love child. But you know, if you look at the stats of Greg Taylor and Laxalt's marginally a better defender. Greg Taylor's marginally better attacking player. Point being, there's not much in it between them, right? And I always remember in Ronnie Dyla's last season, there was a third player that I can't get my head around, but Ronnie Dyla was playing 4-2-3-1, and he would play Gary Mackay, and the team wasn't clicking, and he would play Gary Mackay-Stevens for a couple of games on the left of the 4-2-3-1. Then he would play Stuart Armstrong for a couple of games on the left of the 4-2-3-1. And there was a third player who's escaped me just now that I can't think of.
It's Anthony Stokes.
Was it?
He threw a wee spell of playing Anthony Stokes wide in the left, and Stokes hated it. He was like a fish out of water.
But the point being, I always felt the problem for Ronnie Dyla was he knew they were good players, but there was just the team wasn't quite clicking. But they were all much of a muchness when they were getting a game for the club. And so the problem was, because one of them wasn't so much of a standout all over the others, he would play one for 2-3 games and then say, right, I'll just play the other one who's virtually the same and play him for a couple of games and then just play. And for me, it's a bit the same with Lennon. He's playing Laxalt for a couple of games, but he's not quite getting what he wants from him. So he then chucks in Greg Taylor for a couple of games because, well, there's marginal difference between the two. And he's playing Beaton and Duffy, and there's marginal difference between them. So it's just your point about players that are much for muchness that you just for most of the season. And it's only now as we hit January that I would say I think I know what Neil Lennon's best 11 is. And the problem is, although this is a review of 2020, I'm going to touch on the Rangers game. We, after the Lille game, beating Kilmarnock 2-0, getting the cup despite what we went through, beating Ross County 2-0, beating Hamilton 3-0, beating Dundee United 3-0. I actually went into that Rangers game having written off the season. I went into the Rangers game thinking, do you know what? If we beat them,
we're in.
And then when the game's in hand, we're 4 points behind and they might start to crap it. We've got a chance here. And we were, by quite some considerable distance, the best team. I mean, at half time, it was as one-sided at half time as the October game had been between the two sides the other way. Incredibly one-sided. I don't even know, did Barkas touch the ball in the first half?
Not that I can think of.
And the you know, I look at that and I think, actually, Sorrow coming in for Brown, and my argument for a lot of the season was that Duffy was not as utterly crap as people were saying. Barkas, he's played for Greece, he's played Champions League football, he cannot be as crap. Is the problem that he's playing in front of a nervous back four who are playing behind a midfield with the ball's leaking through, and suddenly by putting Sorrow in and shoring that up,
I'll give you a comparison.
Ross County, Hamilton, Dundee United, and half the Rangers game, we hadn't conceded a goal and didn't look like conceding a goal.
Do you remember the John Barnes season, where the Barnes Dalglish season, whereby we had guys like Stylian Petrov, a young boy, but he was struggling. There's no getting away with it. He was struggling.
Well, he could play the right back and stuff like that.
He played in the wrong position, but there was nothing very impressive about him. Bobby Pett had a terrible season, to the point that John Barnes claims that he couldn't play him. Johan Mialbe just didn't make any impression. Who else did we have at the time? There was four or five players there that were making no contribution to the team.
Now, Larson changed, got injured, Viduka was...
Yeah. So you change the manager. Next time Martin Hill comes in, Martin Hill takes a look at Petrov and goes, oh, this boy is a central midfield player. That's where he's going to play. Petrov is outstanding. Bobby Petter, he fills him full of confidence. He turns him running into the player that Bobby Petter should be. And Johan Mialbe, he has a look at big Mialbe and he thinks, maybe not mobile enough for a midfield player, but by God, what a centre back that big man's going to make. And he makes a player out of him as well. I think that there's players at Celtic Park at the moment that could happen to with the right manager. If you get a new manager in, guys like Barkas, maybe even Duffy to an extent, although I think Duffy is just calamitous. There was one that, against Rangers where he literally just looked up and passed the ball to the first Rangers player. We were lucky not to lose a second goal. And at that point, you think that can't be tolerated. There comes a point that you think, no, there's just too many mistakes. And that you cannot tolerate that level of poor performance. So I don't see any future for Duffy. I think in January, he should just go back to Brighton and we take our chances with whoever we can get. But I do think that a new manager coming in, that there is a team there that can be moulded. If somebody comes in enthusiastic with a good tactical nous who plays a system that suits the players, then I think that we could have a good future.
You know, so again, look at, I remember doing podcasts at the end of the Ronnie Dyla period, talking about how many players needed to go out and what a turnover we needed. And then when Brendan Rodgers came in, talking about how many, you know, what Brendan Rodgers would need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Brendan Rodgers' second season, everybody's talking about how it's the same Ronnie Dyla team. And in fact, one of the criticisms of Brendan Rodgers was his signings weren't playing because they weren't as good as the people who were already there under Ronnie Dyla.
Yep. The only player in the first season that he really brought in that made a major contribution was Dembele.
Scott Sinclair.
Scott Sinclair. It's terrible who you can forget about somebody who scored 32 goals. Yeah, Sinclair and Dembele. Kolo Touré, I think, in the early months of the season, played a big part. And he was... I thought Duffy would have been that kind of player. I thought he'd have been an experienced man who would have come in there and talked Ayer through a game and helped him progress. And maybe even talked Beaton through a game as well, because Beaton's not an actual centre-half.
But Touré... There's an element of Touré that reminds me of Brown, and that I felt Touré was there for a few months for Brendan Rodgers to have his guy on the pitch.
Yeah, a leader.
And actually, Touré was at fault for a couple of goals. I remember he was at fault for goal against Borussia Mönchengladbach and against Motherwell.
Well, in the 4-3 game, was it 4-3
game? Yeah. And pretty much after the Motherwell, or I can't remember, was it after the Motherwell or Borussia Mönchengladbach, I can't remember which way around, that was him. And that was the end of it, because, and again, this gets back to the being decisive as a manager, because despite the fact he was brought in by Brendan to be his guy on the pitch, Brendan saw him make those couple of mistakes that were pretty much down to age, and went, mate, you're out. And the... So we went into the Rangers game. I thought we can do something. Half time, I thought, right, okay. And everybody's sending that the usual text of, when you're so dominant, you've got to score.
Yeah.
And I thought, no, if we just keep being this dominant in the second half. And I remember middle, you know, we were in a WhatsApp group that we were talking about things, and I was in the middle of making... I think somebody had mentioned that it looked like Turnbull was starting to tire, and I just sent a message saying, one of the big criticisms of Lennon this season is he's seen players tire 2 minutes too late or 5 minutes too late, because I'm spotting a player tire, he's not made the change, 5 minutes later we've conceded a goal in part because that player has tired. And then he makes the substitution of taking that player off that you should have made 5 minutes earlier. Right? So that was my concern. And I thought, right, okay, get Turnbull off, put Elianussi on, or get Griffiths off and put Elianussi on, because Griffiths was tying as well. Mm-hmm. Elianussi's our top scorer. Elianussi, for me, is a bit like Rogic. He's better games this season have been when he's come on as a sub with 20, 25 minutes to go in the opposite, and the game's a bit more stretched. But then Beaton goes and...
Yeah. The thing you made a point there about how when you're on top you need to turn the screw, and there's no doubt about it, we didn't do that when we should have, but the first goal was always going to be crucial in that game, and I was desperate for us to score first, and for obvious reasons I think if we'd have scored first, particularly in that first half, we could have only won that 2-3-0. I really do, but because that just the way the game was going. Another thing as well is that Rangers team this season, off the top of my head, have never had to come from behind. I think they lost the first goal to Motherwell at Ibrox. But in the bigger games that they've played, even in the European games, I don't remember them losing the first goal very often, and that would have been a huge question for them to answer. Going 1-0 down to Celtic after 25 minutes at Ibrox, Celtic with their tails up, and I think we play better when teams come on to us. And they would have had to have come out at that point and played more an open game than they did. And I think, I think we could have went on to win that 2 or 3-0.
The 4-4-2 with the diamond, everybody's, for me, one of the criticisms this season is our players have seemed very far apart. So part of the reason why mistakes are getting made is because when a guy who's a bit nervous is getting closed down, he's not got a Celtic player nearby that he can quickly get the ball to. And in the 4-4-2 diamond, in those run of December games, our team looked more compact. When somebody had the ball, there was always two players close to him that he always felt he could get it to. And we closed Rangers down, we pressed them, we ran at them with the ball. But that was a high-energy game, so for me it looked like we needed to make substitutions round about the 60th to the 70th minute to keep things fresh because of that. And I just think if Beaton had stayed on the park, they would have... I think they were moving to the point of, as long as we don't lose this game. I think that was they were moving to that mentality just as Beaton went off.
Even a draw would have been the end of the world. It would have been a wee bit of a morale booster. It was particularly the way that the game played out where we were the dominant team. Now, the thing about Beaton getting sent off is that he, to me, he's not an actual defender. The big man's a midfield player all day long. And he's actually not a bad midfield player as well. He's a good passer of the ball.
The only thing is, he's not really played midfield now for nearly 4 years.
But I think it shows how a weakness in our squad that you need to play a guy out of position like Beaton. And he will come in and play against Ross County and Kilmarnock and Motherwell and look not a bad player. But when you step up that different, you know, class of team, and in this country it's going to be Rangers, and when you get into Europe it's going to be the European teams, then his flaws are showing up more.
I suppose the defence of the squad in that position would be, well, we've got Ayer and Julian, who were a good centre-half pair in last season. We signed Duffy, a Premiership centre-half.
Yep.
So Beaton, okay, Duffy's ended up being not. But under that scenario, Beaton's our fourth-choice centre-half would be the defence of the squad.
I know, but I just feel that when you play a midfield player, a guy who's essentially a midfield player at centre-half, then in big games like that, then he's the weak link. And so I had concerns about him getting into the Rangers game because but Julian get injured against Dundee United, you get that horrible feeling in your stomach. You think that looks serious. He might be out here. Oh God, he'll miss the Rangers game. Julian and I have been the best centre back pair. And therefore, when Beaton comes in, it's that's going to be a weakness. And it showed on the day He made the blunder that, in essence, cost us the game because at that point we were in control.
And again, getting back to your point, if we'd scored, and my point about Elianussi, playing that 4-4-2 with the diamond, and then if we'd have scored in the first half, and they would have been trying to push on to us, at 60, 65 minutes, again, if Piton doesn't make the fill... At 65 minutes, we can take Griffiths off if he's blown out of his arse. Mm-hmm. Put on Elianussi. Go to 4-2-3-1, so keeping in solid shape, but also have continue a goal threat at the back, but a slightly different one for them to consider. Mm-hmm. And you go to 4-2-3-1, their full-backs continue to be pressed. Just everything about that game could have been so different. One, if we'd scored in two. But that's football, isn't it? It's without sounding like some sort of... cliche manager, you know, all our lives, football's ifs and buts.
If we had a lead at the 60, at the 70 minute mark, for example, what you could also have done is you could have bought Brown on for McGregor and played Brown and Soro together to protect the back four and see the game out. You know,
I think you would have brought him on for Turnbull because Turnbull was starting to tire, but your point's right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The criticism of what a Lennon substitution was, I couldn't work out what he was trying to do, and we ended up shapeless. And I need to touch on this because it's a bugbear of mine. You know how that way, you were talking about playing schoolboy football, you're getting beat in the last 5 minutes and you think, throw the big guy up front and we'll just kick high balls up to him and we'll try and get a goal. That's primary school tactics, because the biggest boy in the team, you push him up and you just hope somehow that he can bully the weaker guys in the opposition to getting a goal when you punt big high balls into him. And we threw Duffy up front. And that, honestly, is embarrassing. I found that.
The other thing that was so frustrating, and the reason why I thought, despite everything that's gone on this season, the reason why I thought if we could get a result at Ibrox, we've still got a chance, was our next run of games where home to Hibs, home to Livingston, away to Livingston, home to Hamilton, away to Kilmarnock, home to Motherwell, home to St Mirren, sorry, away to St Mirren, away to St Johnstone, and then the Aberdeen double header at Celtic Park. Mm-hmm. You were looking at that run of how many games was that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. A run of 10 games.
Winnable.
That you could win it. Based on the way that we played the St Johnstone and the Ross County and the Dundee United game and the first 60 minutes against Rangers, based on the way those games were played, you were thinking, right, okay, there are 10 winnable games. In fact, after that, we're at home to St Mirren, away to Dundee United. You were looking at, it wouldn't be beyond the realms of possibility we win those 12 games, because they're all winnable. We win those 12 games and we go to play Rangers at Ibrox. Sorry, back at Celtic Park.
Hopefully with our tails.
We won 12 games in a row. If they've dropped points in any of those games, suddenly...
It's game on.
Yeah. But that's on for 2021. This is a review of 2020 that's lasted over 2 hours. So,
where did time go?
2020, we won 9 in a row. 2020, we won a quadruple treble. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we finished 2020 with fans attacking the team bus, chanting for the manager to go, and the club putting barriers up at the ground. How would you sum up 2020?
I think...
A year of two halves.
Well, as I said to you there earlier on, it's almost like a wartime scenario whereby there's been nothing like this since the Second World War. I mean, like, football has always been played. The idea that the football season would not finish at the beginning in August 2019 was incomprehensible. It just would not have been considered. Nobody could have foresaw what was going to happen. It's been a disaster. In a health situation, in as much as it's a terrible situation, people are dying, people are becoming seriously unwell, in a scale that the National Health Service has never had to deal with. So I feel a wee bit uneasy about comparing, about talking about football, but none of us could have foresaw what was going to come. And I think if we have been unlucky in one respect, fate has not been kind to us since March. Everything has transpired against us in every way. So, and then the other side of the coin, Rangers have benefited to a great degree. And I have to say that, yeah, fate has transpired against us, but we've also shot ourselves in the foot. The latest thing about the Dubai thing, I don't want to get into any detail on that, I just want to touch upon it to say, as a PR thing, it's been an absolute disaster, and it shows you that I think that the people who are running the club are out of touch with the way the world is and what the supporters' mood is.
Do you know, I getting back to the everything's been crap timing this season thing, was summed up with the Dubai trip, because things were nowhere near as bad as they were when that was organised.
No.
Now, I'm not saying this, you know, so everything was hunky-dory, it was perfectly organised. I'm just making the point. Rangers have played teams who've had three or four players out with COVID. We've not. Mm-hmm. We've had Mohamed, Beaton,
Christie,
Edward out with COVID.
Tumble come back and had COVID after being away with Scotland. And Sturgeon has got the cheek to stand up there at Parliament and castigate Celtic when the SFA brought half the under-21 team back into the country with the virus.
Yeah, we've had Turnbull out as well. Sure. And then we've had injuries as well, with Julian being injured and Ayeti coming and then immediately getting injured. And as you say, I don't think he's ever been fit. So we've had this run that Rangers haven't. The only counter to that I make is the principle of, you always find good managers never seem to have that bad of run of bad luck. They do, actually. The problem is that the thing is, you don't notice it because they always get through it. That's the difference. So that was 2020, a year of two halves. We won the nine in a row, an incredible achievement. We won a quadruple treble, which people will look back on for decades as an incredible achievement. The second half of 2020 has just been a shit show, with the exception of that quadruple treble. So I'm not going to make predictions for 2021. What will be. And with that, I will say, St. Anthony, thanks very much.
My pleasure, as always.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
Hope you enjoyed our review. Interesting, when you look back in hindsight, were the results really that bad? I don't know, it's the performances when you go into it. Anyway, enough of me. That is St. Anthony with myself, Harry Brady, and this is me saying Happy New Year, and speak again soon. Good night and God bless. Good night.
Through the years, never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.